Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bry.
Oh, yeah, Friday. What does that mean, Kristen Bry? When we say Friday on Point Taken, what does that mean?
It means I'm teasing the old guys.
Yeah,
usually.
Why are you laughing over there?
Yeah.
You want to tell the audience?
It's because she's got
laughing.
Another young guy in the room.
Hey, oh, wait, how big is maybe your father?
But Joe's not man. That young, according to
No, he's not.
Steve, you've never offended
he's
me before.
He's generationally old, I think.
You did it yesterday.
I what?
You offended me. You called me an old guy.
Generationally old, not age old. And there's nuance to everything, including what I say on the show.
I knew what you meant. As an old guy. A fellow old guy.
Thanks for that defense there, Bill McCoshin. Joseph Pecky alongside as well. We may be here for 2 hours, folks. Lots to talk about. Lots of news last night. This Epstein letter from Donald Trump.
Body birthday letter.
A body birthday. That's some alliteration.
Have
there.
You guys ever written one of your guy friends a body letter. Birthday letter?
No.
I've written some body emails.
Now, none of my friends are 50. Because you're young. I'm very young and youthful and hale, unlike some people at
so this
table.
Is not a thing that a lot of guys do?
No.
Guys don't write letters.
Yeah.
You send body text messages?
I send jokes.
Okay.
Yeah. No. Yeah, I mean, they're text messages I wouldn't want public, for sure.
All right. So what we're talking about, Wall Street Journal reported yesterday, the candidates, actually it was way before he was a candidate, just the citizen Trump, sent Jeffrey Epstein, now deceased, the sexual predator, pedophile, all that stuff, a very bawdy letter, salacious is the term that the Wall Street Journal used, for his 50th birthday in 2004.
Along with other letters. It was basically Ghislaine Maxwell was collecting letters from his friends and created like a book for Epstein.
Bound by a bookmaker in Manhattan.
Yeah. Maxwell, his sort of confidant or whatever you want to call it. Yeah, madam, put it together. Now, Trump denied this. He's already threatening to sue. It also included, apparently, a picture of a naked woman that he drew. And then he quickly said, I think last night, that he never draws anything.
He's like, I don't draw.
That's a lie.
And then there were, oh, yeah, it was a lie, because immediately, all these pictures that he's drawn for charity events.
He's a doodler.
Yeah,
like, he is constantly doodling in the
margins.
Well, you
see a signature, that's a doodle.
Yeah.
Yeah, signature doodle.
I just on this point, context matters. And we all lived through Signalgate. Where the Goldstein, who was the Atlantic reporter?
Goldberg.
Was like, I got added to this chat. This is what was discussed. And the Trump administration's response was, this was a lie. And then Goldstein went, okay, here's the texts. The Wall Street Journal knows that they pull that move. I think the reason they didn't actually publish the pictures yesterday or like a photo of this book is they're laying in the tall grass going, he's going to lay a trap and we're going to be able to spring it on him. He's going to say this is all fake, and then they're going to be able to be like, here's the actual book.
Bill, you're a Trump guy.
They've clearly got it.
You're a Trump guy. What does he do with this?
So let's go back to what I said last Friday. I think that this was ham-handed from the jump, which was on the weekend of the 4th of July. So this is now a 10 or 11-day story, which is the longest story in the 6 months he's been president.
That's what I said this
And it's
week.
A negative, right? Because they mishandled it from the jump. They finally got it right last night when they said, you know, we'll release the grand jury transcripts that we're allowed to release. By the way, there's a side piece of this where the judge has sitting on some of those grand jury things and may not let some of them come out. But the extent they can release what they can, that's apparently going to happen today.
But, no, it's not.
What, but
this is not going to be
whole
enough.
The piece of this that I have not read enough about is the fact that the Comey has been fired this same week. The prosecutor against Epstein.
Yeah, that's. I think that's
think
a
that's
different
separate?
Story. I do think that's separate. But they're finally getting this right. But as it relates to this letter, Trump is vehemently denying it. But the other thing I said last Friday, that's the point I'm trying to make, is I expected Democrats to overplay their hand, or let's say Trump opponents. This is a net negative for Donald Trump until last night. I think it's now turning into a net positive for him because it's reunited MAGA around sort of the deep state and all the Trump haters out there.
Around Rupert Murdoch?
Yeah.
Known Trump hater?
Well, he's not exactly a Trump lover, is he?
He's not a Democrat, though.
He runs Fox News, which created Donald
Trump.
He's
not a Democrat, which is what Trump sort of laid it on in laps of Democrats.
Yeah, but Trump's been pretty direct about Murdoch last night and today. He's going to sue him. And by the way, Trump's on a heater as far as suing the media. He's won two cases now with multiple
cases,
more in the hopper. So, you know, we'll see how this plays out. if the Wall Street Journal doesn't have their facts straight on this, they're going to pay a heavy price.
Speaking of this, because we haven't talked about this. Speaking of Fox News and lawsuits, Fox News edited his original answer to the Epstein list.
Yeah, it's election interference.
And what I don't know if you do. Do you know this?
I do not.
And
know
then
this.
They released his full answer.
It's the same thing that
and
he's
the
suing.
Is this the
Rachel Duffy interview?
Yes.
Yes. And so there was a shorter answer in when during the campaign of what was aired. And then this last week, Fox said this was what his full answer to this was, which is the exact thing that Trump sued CBS over as far as editing a long interview into something shorter, which happens all the time because you only have X amount of time for a broadcast.
Kamala Harris should sue for $100 billion. So listen, I have never been bought into the Epstein conspiracy until the last 10 days. Because Donald Trump is someone who access Hollywood tape, we heard it, right?
And it was prominent in the 2016 election.
He said on a television show, perhaps if Ivanka wasn't my daughter, I'd be dating her. We know that he was sleeping with his future wives while still married to his past wives. He was convicted of a felony related to a hush money payment to a porn star before he became president. He believes he was saved by God to be president. What could possibly be in the Epstein files that is so much worse than any of that? I am now bought in. I want full transparency. Like this, it defies logic that there could be something that he's like, it's fine, just whatever.
Hold that thought.
I survived worse.
Hold that thought because that's an interesting point because the one thing that could condemn this president is an actual picture or evidence of a relationship with a minor.
May every day be another wonderful secret.
Yeah, we'll see. All right, Bill McCosh and Joseph Pecky, we're just getting warmed up on this Friday edition. Used to be Political Power Hour. Now it's Point Taken. Kristen and Steve, 620 WTMJ. Oh, man, this is going to be a good one today. Bill McCosh and Joseph Pecky, our strategist friends who join us every Friday here on Point Taken. Kristen Bryce, Steve Spitty. So continuing the Epstein conversation, I said before the break, and curious what you think. The reason why, one, I think Bill's right. This was, you know, fumbled and mishandled and just horribly managed from a PR perspective and probably from a, in some ways, a legal perspective, as we might find out later. But the thing that would really matter in this is if there's actually something that links the President of the United States with a minor with a relationship. That's the big thing that people allude to all the time. I'm not saying that happened, but I'm saying that's the big thing.
And here's the problem. So, like, I sent you guys last night. On February 27th of this year, Attorney General Pam Bondi writes a letter to Kash Patel, the new head of the FBI, saying, I demanded all of the Epstein files. I got some stuff, but I just learned that there's a bunch of stuff you didn't turn over to me. I need it in the next 2 weeks. I need a full accounting of why the FBI didn't turn it over. That was February 27th. A couple weeks later, she's on TV and she says, oh, those files are on my desk. And 2 months after that, we are supposed to believe them when they say, there's no file. What files? Like, forget the 10 years of Trump fanning the flames on this conspiracy. Just in the last 6 months, they have been operating knowing that this stuff exists. And now they want us to believe that it doesn't, and he's calling his own supporters stupid and saying he doesn't want their support.
Weaklings.
If they keep asking
Weaklings.
These questions, there is something here.
Yeah, I'm on Pam Bondi. She's the most underwhelming of his cabinet, in my opinion, other than her solicitor general, who's got a phenomenal record at the U.S. Supreme Court right now on all these cases that have made it there. I think she's been underwhelming, and she fanned the flames on this. Her own statements have made this like an inferno.
Yeah.
And then she says nothing on the way out. It started to dawn on me when both Kash Patel and Dan Bongino said maybe 5 weeks ago, the guy didn't kill him, or the guy wasn't murdered. He committed suicide. Full stop. Those are people that MAGA trusts implicitly. And so I'm like, okay, maybe this isn't going to turn out the way a lot of us thought it might. But the way she hyped it and then to duck and dodge the way she has hurt the president in immeasurable ways with the base, and him sticking by her either suggests to me that she's working on some other stuff that he really wants to get done, possibly, because replacing her would mean another confirmation. or she just isn't that good. I'm not sure.
They say we've seen the files. The guy didn't kill himself. Then they release a video that has a 2.5 minute time gap. Whoops. Dan Bongino takes a mental health day on Friday. This is a guy who, I'm sure, on a podcast has like bashed the whole notion of a mental
health day. Dan Bongino was clearly up here.
For the listeners, this is actually a Susie Wiles accomplishment. The fact that, the DOJ was melting down from Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, she was able to pull that together. Bongino was back at work on Monday. By Saturday, Patel put out a statement saying he's all for this. There is nothing there. That's staffers don't often get the credit they deserve. The fact that Susie Wiles was able to pull that all together and there was no dissension in the ranks is pretty remarkable.
But one of the things that I'm not going to say I knew before I started reading things this morning, because I am not a lawyer, but when we think about grand juries can only focus on the accused and the victims. So the, you know, throwing this out there as far as Trump doing something and mandating that this get released, he's not going to be in that. Other co-conspirators aren't going to be in the grand jury testimony because of what it can actually focus on. And so he knows that there's nothing in there that's going to incriminate anyone, but it's like giving someone a little treat.
Here Fig leaf, I think that's called.
Is that what it was?
All right. Coldplay.
Okay, so we're moving on.
This is the last point
I want to make, because you say the Democrats should leave this alone.
I think they already overplayed their hand on it.
I feel like this feeds into the Coldplay thing that we're talking about. This is so clickable. Look, we just spent 20 minutes talking about this, right? This is way more fodder than talking about the Medicaid cuts that are coming in 2 years. So as far as keeping this alive and well, as long as it makes Trump bad, I don't think it's that bad of a play for Democrats.
No, and Democrats should continue to make Republicans, including Wisconsin Republicans in Congress, vote against transparency, because that's what they did this week.
We talked about it last week. The average voter doesn't care about Jeffrey Epstein. They just don't. They do care about what might happen with Medicaid. So if you're going to try and beat the party that's in charge.
I think it's the opposite, though, as far as the salaciousness of this story.
It's clickable, but they don't really care.
Yeah,
right, but you're not talking about it. You're talking about Epstein.
All right, we'll talk about
Coldplay. Here's some show alliteration. Cuts, Colbert, Coldplay. All of that on the show today. Point taken. So much to talk about on this Friday. Kristen Bryce, this video on Point Taken on the 620 WTMJ. If you miss any or all of this conversation, always available on our podcast page. And this is going to be a good one. We have a lot of great topics today. As we're talking, sort of all the dust has settled, I guess, from the recent approval in the Senate very early in the morning yesterday of this rescission.
For the House to concur.
House had to use a new rule to get it passed last night. Talk about some of the specifics, because I'm not an expert on that stuff. Some of the rules of the game, how it works, what they actually accomplished, what it means going forward.
So a rescission package is not normal order. It only requires 51 votes in the Senate to pass, which obviously would give the advantage to the incumbent party to get something done.
J.D. Vance cast the tiebreaker.
He did on the rules package, but actually on the cuts themselves, they didn't need to. They had 51 votes for that. Mitch McConnell came back. So the Republican Senate looked at the package that the House had developed, and they decided to take something called PEPFAR out. Those were actually aids for AIDS in Africa. They did not want to make that cut, which meant it had to go back to the House for concurrence, which happened sometime around midnight last night. So the House had to look at it one more time. They had to use a sort of an arcane rule on the House side to get this done so that Epstein didn't become an issue last night, truthfully. But here's the funny part about it, and it's really sad, actually. This is the first cut to government since 1999, when Bill Clinton was the president. Newt Gingrich was the speaker. Trent Lott was the majority leader of the Senate, a Republican at that time. We have not had a cut in government spending in 26 years, despite multiple, you know, dips in the economy, recessions, those kinds of things. Government continues to grow. So to Steve's point, is $9 billion a big number? Well, hell no. When you're $37 trillion in debt,
it's one-tenth.
But it's a start.
Of 1%.
And Mike Johnson has committed there are more rescission packages coming. which Democrats frankly can't stop unless there's something in there they can make a national.
But there's also spending that as much
as they want. They can do it as much as they want.
Okay. What was the final ICE budget that they got in the big bill? $145 billion?
Something like that.
And like now the headline this morning, $2 billion to revive Alcatraz.
I'm old enough to remember.
Which is less than the new Fed.
I'm old enough to remember when Elon Musk said he was going to cut $2 trillion in federal spending through DOGE, and it took all week and multiple failed rule votes for Republicans to cut $9 billion. They just voted to add $3.5 to $5 trillion to the national debt, and we're supposed to think this is an accomplishment? Get out of here. This is spitting in the wind.
So the other detail that's probably important for the listeners, these are expenditures that have been approved by previous Congresses, and they're clawing those back.
Right. It's called takes backsies?
Yeah, take backsies.
You just make that up?
Yeah.
Wow, clever. Going forward, because I started to read this hundreds of pages, and there's a lot of wishes and hopes and dreams and as far as budgets and future budgets, cuts. I mean, it's a lot of stuff that could happen, I guess, but is it realistic that it will happen?
It depends on the rescission packages. They need to be smart of what they put in there.
Where would they go?
I would cut some at the Department of Defense, to be honest with you. They just added some. I am a peacenik. I am.
Don't we all want peace?
It's better than a beatnik, right?
Yeah. We do want peace. I believe in peace through strength. The United States has the largest military in the world, and that is a deterrent that keeps the world safe when we have responsible leadership.
Being all hawkish. I love that.
That's not hawkish.
That's the old school Democrat.
You're a tough guy. You're a tough guy.
That's the one that the old guy was referring to. That's the old school Democrat.
Oh, yeah, it's Becky. He's an old Truman Kennedy style Democrat.
In my neighborhood, if you've got your hat on backward, that's ready for a fight.
Yeah, it
is. Stay ready. You don't got to get ready.
We're going to fight. We're going at it. We got something to argue about.
Bang!
Watch out if I start twisting my pinky ring like Tom Holman.
Yeah. He's ready for business, Mr. Holman. All right, we're just getting warm. Coldplay next. That story. I just wanted to go to a concert, and then all that stuff
with
happened.
My side piece.
Yes. Good ad. She's Chris and I'm Steve.
All right, welcome back to Point Taken. I am Kristen Bry. He is Steve Scafidi, and we are here on a Friday with Joseph Pecky, Bill McCaution. And we're going to take a little break, it's a baby break, from politics.
A
little pop culture, a little internet culture.
For Kristen to defend the worst man on the internet this week?
No, it's not that. So, all right, so if you spent any
time... It's more
time
of a warning to anyone going to Coldplay tomorrow night.
The internet.
Everybody pay close attention.
Literally, I could not swipe on any social media app yesterday without seeing the picture of a man who we now know is the CEO of Astronomer, which is a Boston-based AI company.
What they put on their website about what they do. A data infrastructure company focused on data orchestration, specifically through its platform called Astra, which is built on Apache Airflow.
Oh, God. This is like someone who used to work in B2B sales in Silicon Valley. That just gave me like nightmares. Like, it's like,
Simplify the
LinkedIn speak is just gross.
It's nuts.
Anyways, basically, if you have not seen this video, they're at a Coldplay concert, and like the kiss cam comes up, and you see this couple fully embraced. Like,
more of a canoodle cam.
It's a canoodle, big spoon situation, and they look very happy.
Spooning cam.
And then as soon as they realize their faces are on the kiss cam, he drops to the floor.
Like he got shot.
And she immediately turns around, and there's a friend sitting next to them just laughing like, oh my God, I can't believe this just happened. So then Chris Martin, lead singer of Coldplay, literally says, he goes, they're either having an affair or they're very shy.
Yeah.
So then it comes out, she's the head of HR. He is the CEO of this company, and he is married. I think she's married too.
Not to one another.
Yes, and they're not married to each other.
Head of HR.
And the internet went nuts over this.
Still is today.
The internet was tearing this guy apart. The memes, including a fake apology letter that a lot of people thought were real.
Me too.
That was one of the conversations we were going to have today. It's like, how do you handle this crisis? This is not it. Well, turns out that letter was fake. And there's a lot of different angles to talk about this. But I just think... the swarming nature of us all wanting, like, we're so desperate to have a shared experience. Because we don't have the water cooler.
I don't want to share that experience.
No, but like we're sharing the
I bet your wife doesn't either.
We're sharing the making fun of it. Something that we can all enjoy together. We can enjoy the memes. We can enjoy the gossip. We can enjoy the tea. And there's like something like, is this really what we're living for now?
People want to be connected. This is why they go to concerts like I did this week. This is why people go to ball games. This is why the craziest part of the Epstein stuff is it is united Democrats, Republicans, and independents.
Why Shane Gillis' joke was the funniest joke of the night.
And here's my take on this. I want to live in a world where there are consequences for poor choices and poor decisions. If you are drunk after 30 holes of golf and you pop off to a former NHL player, you're going to get thrown in the lake. Yeah. If you are cheating on your wife and gallivanting around at concerts as if everything's okay, I want you to be found out. There should be consequences for bad behavior in the world.
Kristen?
And I do agree with that. It's just something about, like the all the fake stuff that gets created around it. And it's, like, it's not a... These are private citizens who have not opted in to having their life be picked apart.
He chose... They made their choices. Those choices were wrong.
So are you
So when someone goes, what was the... It was the Steelers fan last year at the Packers game where he was just berating that Packers female fan. And I think he ended up getting fired, right? Because he was just... He kept calling her the C word again and again. And that went viral, and so then he got fired.
Good.
So that's those, like, you're like, that's the kind of accountability that the internet provides.
Are you arguing if this is fair or not?
I don't know. I just don't know how I feel about it.
Bill?
I'm not defending him.
Well, it sounds like you are.
Joe sounded a little like a Catholic. Just so all the Catholic listeners out there understand what I'm about to say, which is we own guilt.
Yes.
We own shame. That's our religion. It's all built on that. So when you see someone else make a mistake like this, so blatantly public, there has to be consequences. No question about it. I got sucked into his quote-unquote crisis statement yesterday, which turned out to be a spoof, because I retweeted somebody who is very prominent on X and figured it's got to be good. Listen, in a situation like this, when you make a mistake, there are going to be consequences. He's going to get a divorce, full stop. He's going to lose half of that $1.2 billion he's said to be worth, or more, full stop. He's going to have limited access to his kids, full stop. Those are real consequences. Yeah. If I'm on his board of directors or if I'm one of the co-owners of the company, if it's private, he might not be there next week. Mm. She definitely won't be there next week. There's going to be a change in management. So there will be consequences for this guy. But sort of the general rule of thumb, if you are a comms professor, is here's what you do when in a crisis comms situation. You take responsibility. You apologize. You ask for forgiveness. And then you let it sit.
Unless you're Donald Trump.
You don't do anything more than that. And by the way, over time, it does get better. As someone who's made mistakes, it does get better. But there are immediate consequences. And he will face those. And I think that's a good thing. And I think yesterday, as it relates to, you know, this going viral, it was sort of a uniting thing for everybody. Everyone was like, God, I'm glad that was him, right? So if you are going to the Coldplay concert tomorrow night, take your husband or take your wife. Don't take your side piece because you might end up on the Jumbotron at Camp
Randall. Wear a disguise if you do.
Yeah.
So do we think
fake mustache, sunglasses?
Do you think that both of them will be fired or released?
I think there's a very high probability of that.
Texture makes a great point. If it was someone that worked for either of these individuals and they were caught in a situation with a fellow employee and in a situation where you're not supposed to be engaged in those things, those people would be fired.
100%. There's likely company rules against that.
Yeah. Let's bring this back to politics. The Department of Justice recently fired a career FBI agent because he went to a concert with Peter Strzok, who Donald Trump doesn't like.
Hmm. Not familiar with that story.
I don't know that story.
I'll get you the receipts on it.
All right. That's an interesting one. We got to take a break here. God, we got so many topics today. Do we have more on this one, or are we going to move on?
I think we're going to move on.
All right.
Colbert.
Another sort of a pop culture one, but politics involved in that one as well. Bill McCauchy, Joseph Pecky, Kristen Bryce, Steve Cifini, point taken Friday, 620 WTMJ.
This change has leveled us up while being able to maintain the same quality of service that we've always provided, with no upfront fees and 1.9% real estate commission. We're proud to be part of the Century 21 family, so you can move fearlessly with the added confidence of top-of-the-line marketing for maximum home exposure. And that means more eyeballs and the real potential for the highest price for your home. This is Angela Calais with Century 21 Benefit Realty, benefit-realty.com, where you pay less for full service. Each office is independently owned and operated. With the ability to market luxury homes on a higher scale than ever before, Century 21 Benefit Realty has taken a huge step forward to tap into a global network of buyers. Maximum exposure to spotlight your unique home with our fine homes and estates marketing so you can sell it for the highest price. And with no upfront fees and 1.9% real estate commission, you win. This is Angela Calais with Century 21 Benefit Realty, benefit-realty.com, where you pay less for full service. Each office is independently owned and operated.
Hey, it's WTMJ, Steve Kaffee. For Milwaukee Weight Loss, I love talking about these guys because they've been so helpful to me and they can be helpful for you. Listen, I had to lose about 40 pounds. It's good for your health. It makes you feel better. Everything that you do in life is easier when you weigh less. There's a lot of trendy things happening in weight loss now. You've heard about all these fancy fad diets, but and the injections, all that stuff, and the gimmicky stuff, the meals, the bars, the shakes, all that. But if you've dealt with like the yo-yo stuff and the weight coming back after a short amount of time, you can actually change your life. And that's what happened with me with Milwaukee Weight Loss. It's doctor-developed, natural, and it's helped people like me lose up to 10 to 20% of their body weight in just 8 weeks. It's not easy, but you can do it. I did it. And many patients lose 20 to 30 pounds in just a month or two. And I've actually lost about 5 pounds since I lost the original weight. Ready to stop all that yo-yo dieting? Take control of your life. There's a smarter, faster, and safer way to do that. It's MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com or call them. Just call them right now. Get a free consultation. 262-393-2334. I'll go slow. 262-393-2334. That's MilwaukeeWeightLoss.com.
An official message from Medicare.
I turned 65 this year. I knew it was time to figure out Medicare, and I had questions, like when to enroll and how to enroll. So I went straight to the official source, Medicare.gov, to get the facts about Medicare. I found answers to all my questions, and I'm ready to get started. And so can you. Just go to Medicare.gov to get the real facts about Medicare.
Paid for by the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services.
When you're hiring, have you ever felt like you're missing out on meeting great candidates? Well, they're not hard to find when you go to ZipRecruiter. ZipRecruiter helps 10 million people with their job search every day. People who are actively looking for jobs like yours. So it's easy to find the right person fast. 4 out of 5 employers who post on ZipRecruiter get a quality candidate within the first day. Try ZipRecruiter for free at ZipRecruiter.com/free. That's ZipRecruiter.com/free.
Hi, I'm Eric Brown, owner of Siding Unlimited, reminding you to double-check your home. Siding Unlimited is the proven exteriors professionals for 31 years. Family-owned and locally operated right here in Wisconsin. Call Siding Unlimited and visit SidingUnlimited.com.
One more C to talk about. Stephen Colbert, his show, he announced
last night.
Going away, not right away.
May 2026.
Yeah, I mean, you and I had a running conversation this morning. Late night TV is changing. It has been changing for a long time. Just give an example. Back in the day, and this is old man talk, so be prepared. Johnny Carson would average 9 million watchers a night, and in his last week, he averaged almost 20 million.
Yeah.
Now, different media environment back then, only a few channels. But we're talking a million sometimes for some of these late night shows, sometimes 3 million if they got a really great guest. But so it's not the same thing, and there's lots of other choices now. But basically, they're saying to Stephen Colbert, you're going away, and it's not the first one. We've had other shows. The gentleman who
it's the first of the big ones, though.
Yeah, the Jimmy Kimmels and the
Seth Meyer.
Seth Meyer.
Well, Seth Meyer's later though, isn't he?
Yeah. Yeah.
So yeah. In exactly. That time right. Slot, it's late, Jimmy. Late it's night. Jimmy Fallon. It's
Jimmy
Stephen. There's Jimmy Kimmel. Yep. There's Jimmy Fallon. There's Jimmy Kimmel. And there's Colbert.
Yeah. Yeah.
And so those are the three big ones at that time slot. And then later is Seth Meyers. I don't know who else is in the lineup for the show.
I think
after
everybody
that.
Else is gone, basically.
But so it's the timing of this, because both, at least, Joe, you didn't weigh in on this, but the timing is weird because the finances of talk shows, I do agree, when he could start a podcast tomorrow and probably get just as many downloads and listens.
Probably more.
Probably more. Right?
Like, the infrastructure.
Like Conan O'Brien, his podcast is wildly popular.
The infrastructure of a network talk show, comedy show at night is millions of dollars.
Because they probably still get more views now on their YouTube channel than who are tuning into the show.
Absolutely.
So I get that. But it is also suspicious that it is happening days after the settlement came out with Paramount and the Trump case. Stephen Colbert lit that up on his show.
Called it a bribe.
In a monologue. And then a couple days after that, show was going to sunset next year.
More than one thing can be true at the same time.
Agreed.
The economics of late night television and the cultural influence of it is changing, has been changing. This is a tale as long as I've been an adult, right? That can be true. At the same time, it can be deeply, deeply concerning that if what happened here was the state, the Trump administration, insisted as part of a deal, whether on book or off book, with a major media corporation in this country, that we will not approve the deals that you want unless you fire this person. That is deeply, deeply troubling if it is true.
Is that what you're saying has happened?
It sure looks that way. We don't know it. But if that is true, at the same time, it is true that, you know, there's changes to late night lineups and Colbert's kind of been doing it a while. Like, both of those things can be true at the same time. And if they are, that is deeply, deeply concerning. We are seeing this administration go after individual journalists. We know that they're playing fast and loose with ethics rules. They're hollowing out the Division of Public Integrity at the Department of Justice. This multiple members of Congress have called this the most corrupt administration in American history. This is a problem. If they can use the power of the government to tell corporations what they can and can't do, who they can and can't hire, and conservatives used to give a rip about that.
I'd say this. Colbert's not very funny.
Oh, you, I disagree.
He's just not
to
that
you,
good.
Shane Gillis is funny to you, but not to my wife.
Well,
humor's in the eye of the beholder.
Here's the point. That's what Steve said earlier. There was some data out earlier this week that I think it's 65 or 70% of content is consumed over the air, streaming.
So
the dynamics of television have changed dramatically over the last 10 years, to say nothing of the last 40 years since Johnny Carson's been on the air. And I did a Google search this morning. David Letterman's average audience was 3.5 million. Colbert's is 2.5. Lots of Nights is barely over 1 million. So it's at least a third less. So he is not as attractive
His ratings are the highest of the night shows.
That may be. And it gets to your final point, which is he's probably going to be able to do just fine podcaster because he's got a narrow audience. Nobody on my side watches him, for example. I don't know if
nobody on my side watches Gutfeld.
And that's probably right.
Yeah.
Right?
No, but he's popular. Texture makes a great point. Should CBS have sort of put some air between Colbert's comments?
And
I mean, that makes no sense whatsoever.
Especially if it's not going away until next May anyway.
It looks like censorship.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, that's the contract. It doesn't necessarily mean it's going to be airing through next May. Correct. This relationship,
mattered. You can make $21 million from Milwaukee and still play in Portland.
Paramount owns Comedy Central, and so they own The Daily Show.
Yeah, I mean, we'll stay on this for the rest of the hour because I think there's some other pieces of this story that I think are interesting. Bill McCosh and Joseph Pecky, Point Taken with Kristen and Steve on 620 WTMJ. A couple minutes left with Bill and Joe on this Friday edition of Point Taken.
The first hour.
Wait, are you kidding us out?
We
have a bonus hour here.
One of the things that I'm interested in, I want to hear what Kristen has to say about this. So much of what people consume about these late night shows is they didn't watch the show.
Oh, no, that's what I'm saying.
They see it somewhere else.
Their clips get way more views. Like the segment of the interview that was the best gets shared a million times or whatever. Or the fun game they played when carpool karaoke was still a thing and stuff like that. Like that's what people see now.
So my point is...
Same thing with SNL, I feel
we shouldn't be surprised that these sort of relic legacy shows that existed 30, 40 years ago are going away. They are all going to go away.
Yeah.
And they're top heavy. You pay the whole Fallon gets $15 million a year. I don't know what Colbert gets, but
I think 15 or 20.
Yeah, they have Colbert's show had 200, not 20, 200 full time employees with salary and benefits.
Yeah, those shows are hard to put on.
Yeah, so people they see the clips. They're not watching these damn shows. So it's a significant change. It's a pivot for the country. They're going to have to deal with these shows. Will not exist. There'll be other things on at night. Probably more.
Video podcasts?
Yeah, more pay-per-view. Probably. But they're going to be low budgets, low risk shows that the networks can put on to just fill the time and take
more
in some
reality TV that you love
my
so
God.
Much.
Yeah, that's the other thing that scares the hell out of me. More reality.
CNN's got a documentary about like the history of late night.
I've seen it. Yeah, yeah, it's very good.
Like the guy who was a competitor of Carson, who was broadcasting the show from the Watergate hearings in the '70s.
Did he have a competitor?
Yeah.
Who?
I forget the name. I'll find it for you.
Yeah, it's a great series, by the way. And it's you know, when you're older, we live that stuff. You didn't watch the Carson show.
I didn't watch the Carson show. I did watch Letterman. I watched Letterman with my parents growing up.
Letterman was also as good as it gets. I mean, he was.
God, he's a good interviewer.
Absolutely. And he still is.
That's what I mean. His Netflix show is incredible.
Absolutely. Netflix making money like nobody's business.
Hanover Fist,
ran into
say?
David Letterman on a bike trail on Martha's Vineyard.
5 seconds or less, everybody's favorite Netflix show right now. We'll do it after the news.
Okay.
All right.
Bin Laden.
Yeah, that's a good one.
Broadcasting live from the Annex Wealth Management Studios at The Avenue, it's time for Point Taken. Here are your hosts, Steve Scafidi and Kristen Bride.
Welcome back to the 11 o'clock hour of Point Taken. Bill McCaution, Joseph Pecky, Steve Scafidi, and me. All right. Tony Evers?
We were going to talk about Netflix briefly, but if you don't want to.
Oh, I still don't. I'm going to say the most watched in our household on Netflix right now, Miss Rachel.
Yeah, it's a kids program.
Yes.
Yeah. I discovered this Chaos show, the series on Netflix. It like takes Greek mythology and like puts it in sort of a modern setting. The only famous person is Jeff Goldblum. He's brilliant in it. Check it out, Chaos. I think it's a one season series.
Also, rewatched Independence Day on Independence Day this year.
Always good.
God, he was a smoke show. I was so young when that movie came out. Jeff Goldblum looked great in that movie. I was too young to appreciate how good looking he was then. He just looked old to me then. Anyways, okay. Joe, go ahead.
I don't see age.
Be a loyal listener, understand that one.
Black Doves. And
also very good.
A Man on the Inside and The Residence, top three Netflix shows this year.
I love Black Doves.
That's
amazing. Oh my God, it was amazing.
We get our recommendations from our oldest son, Patrick. The most recent one we watched was Osama Bin Laden. It's three-part, very good. A lot of details in there I had forgotten.
Was that Brett Favre story on Netflix, or was that a different three-part?
I think it was.
Haven't seen that one yet. Just rewatched the Rogers one because my wife missed it at Christmas when the boys binged it. So we rewatched the Rogers and his freaky drug thing.
Yeah, is he cool with his inside his own skin, or what's his deal?
I don't know.
I think so.
The whole thing's kind of weird. There's something unresolved
in his life.
There's
a hole he's trying to fill.
Kristen said he's going to marry himself.
I did not say that. It was an AI. It was very funny.
It was funny. That's why I gave you the credit for that. All right, Tony Evers. Lots of conversation, including in this building, in this
station
about whether the governor of the state of Wisconsin, Tony Evers, who was on. It's interesting, all this speculation. The only show that actually had the governor on was our show, when we asked him the question.
And he didn't know.
You're a Democrat, Joe.
What a segue this is. I got a little something for Dan O'Donnell, for John Merkier, for you all, for everybody who's going, is he going to run? Is it 36 hours? Jazz, hit me.
Five letters here. Just for everybody out there in Packerland and yourself today. R-E-L-A-X. Relax.
We ate that up when that first came out.
That's actually brilliant. Because one, you're just a guest on the program for the most part, but you incorporated the producer, you had audio, you linked it
to the
thing we just talked about.
Really,
this is good radio.
Brilliant radio.
I need everybody to take a damn chill pill. The midterm elections are 472 days away. Tony Evers, a successful two-term governor. You said it, Steve.
I did.
This is a governor who has accomplished things.
Mm-hmm.
He has said he was going to take a couple of weeks after the budget process was over to make up his mind. Nobody knows other than the governor and his wife if they've even made a decision. I actually think it's very possible they haven't. And you know what? If he makes a decision next week or the week after that or next month, all of it's okay. Why do we need this to be a damn near 500-day campaign?
Because we're news junkies, Joe. We need the next hit.
R-E-L-A-X. Relax. There's no rush here.
Well, there sort of is.
He created a rush.
Yeah, you have to sort it out. He said it. He
multiple
said
times.
The statement. Okay. He's created this environment where we want to know, because he said, I'll tell you in a couple weeks.
Do you think longer campaigns are the answer to what ails our politics? Because I don't.
I'm not going to tell Tony Evers how to run his races. He's won two very successful races. Like, why would I tell him anything?
And people are losing their minds over, oh, he only raised $700,000. He's got $2 million in the bank.
Yes, he
is a proven fundraiser. If he decides to run or not run, it is not going to be about how much money is in the bank. This guy can raise the money. If he decides to run again, he will be the strongest candidate that we could have, and the financial resources will be there. So everybody just chill.
So we know this because Chris and I have been talking about this, and we asked the governor if he would come on our show on State Fair. We actually know, because we talked about this morning as well, that he's going to be on the show at the State Fair, which is, I don't know, a couple weeks away.
2 weeks.
Yeah.
Less than 2 weeks.
Is he going to challenge Kristen to a cream puff eating contest?
No.
He loves cream puffs.
Are we announcing that?
Yeah, you can announce. Go ahead.
I'm going to be, I got asked to be in the cream puff eating contest.
I love
celebrity.
It. I love it.
I know.
Yeah, once
I made it.
Our very own celebrity.
Yeah.
Not a sporky judge yet. That's the next step.
I've actually asked to be a sporky judge.
Why did you turn it down?
No, I said I asked. They didn't ask me. Much different reality than in the world that I live in.
Because I feel like the sporky judges get the best version of the food.
Yes, fresh.
Because once it's getting made all day, every day, like I've had some of the sporky winners at the fair, and I'm like, this is not very good. But I think when you get it as a judge, it's the best you're going to get.
Got a little advice for you from my niece, Micah. We'll figure out the cream puff eating contest version of this, but my brother-in-law, her dad, was in the hot dog eating contest on the 4th of July in Hales Corners, and little Micah, the wisdom of a child, said, it's not about whether you win or lose. It's just whether or not you have fun playing with your wieners. And so the hot dogs, the wieners.
Well, like there's the Catholic guilt again.
Yeah, I mean, we can figure out a cream puff version of that.
Oh, the joke my husband said, I probably can't say it, but it was in a similar vein.
Good edits.
We love you, Micah.
But seriously, I mean, Bill, whatever Evers does,
changes,
Republicans have a
It changes the
choice,
dynamic.
Right? Yeah.
I was 60-40. He is running until I saw his finance report. Everything Joe said is right. He's a very good fundraiser. And being the incumbent makes it even easier to raise money. But for comparison purposes, in this six-month period 4 years ago, he had raised $5 million. This time he raised $700,000. 5 years ago, he had $7 million in the bank. Now he's got $2 million. So there's a fairly significant drop-off here, which suggests to me I'm going to lower my odds to 50-50 that he's going to run again. If he doesn't run, and look at the budget. This is a budget that Tony Evers can walk off into the sunset and say, that was a legacy budget. I got the things that were important to me. And that would be true. He didn't get everything he wanted, particularly related to education, but he got the majority of what he wanted in that budget. So he can walk off and say, I did my deal. I'm done. I'm 73 years old. Kathy and I are going to go play pickleball and maybe, spend some time in Florida in the winter and spend some time with our grandkids. And good for him. And then because I'm one of the 72 Dolphins as it relates to Tommy Thompson, we'll all pop a bottle of champagne that Tommy will remain the only three-term governor, actually four-term governor in Wisconsin history.
Yeah, that's cool.
That's reason enough for Evers to take another run.
Let me ask it this way. Yeah. Either way he goes, you're good. You're confident in the people that will come forward to run for that position.
I think this is going to be a good political environment for Democrats. We see Trump's approval rating continue to plummet, not just overall, but on what used to be good issues for him, like immigration. So with an unpopular president, with a generic ballot already looking bad, and those things usually get worse for the party in power, it's going to be a good year for Dems. We have a bevy of well-qualified, capable candidates. I'm good either way. Governor Evers deserves the space to make this decision. I hope that he runs again. He is the most popular Democrat, most popular politician in Wisconsin. And I think he has earned a third term. But if he decides that he wants to move on, we'll get him the gold watch and send him on his way.
I want to ask you one more question after the break, because it's real specific. Then we'll move on to some other stuff, including should the President of the United States, the current one, get a Nobel Prize, which... people have nominated him. Two world leaders have nominated him.
And one who's been accused of war crimes. So.
Right. All right. But I have a question about 20 years. We'll get to that with Joe and maybe Bill, too. Point taken. Friday edition, 620 WTMJ. All right. We have to podcast the commercial break conversation because they're so good. They're rich. They're
on
deep.
On the road to Shambhala.
Kristen swears a lot. No, she didn't swear a lot. I'm just making that up.
She does.
I do.
She does.
I think I actually... No, I don't want to.
It's the rap.
I tell a story, but I don't want to now.
You know I was raised in Madison.
Yeah.
I do know.
Okay.
That's why you're so liberal? And...
Yeah, probably.
Ooh, damn.
Probably. All right. Madison West.
But smart.
Oh, is that, are those two things mutually exclusive usually?
There are differences between Madison Democrats and South Side of Milwaukee Democrats.
That is true.
That is very true.
That is extremely true.
Chris and I talked about this yesterday. I want to get into all of that stuff. But I'm curious what you think. There are journalists or advocacy journalists, probably more appropriately, that they want to move to the younger candidates and move Tony Evers to the side, the Mr. Rogers of Wisconsin politics, to move him to the side and get some, I don't know, 25-year-old, 35-year-old fresh face. Not a 45-year-old fresh face, because that doesn't exist, Joseph Pecky. But what do you think about that idea?
I think it's crazy. I think it's absurd. We're talking about one person whose name I'm not even going to use, who like concocted this, you know, analogy between Tony Evers and Joe Biden.
And keeps talking about it.
As if they are analogous. They are not. Tony Evers is more than capable of serving another 4 years as governor. And, like, are there some elements within the Democratic Party who want a fresh face? Of course there are. But like this notion that Tony Evers has to pass the torch and he's not up to doing the job again, when for the last 8 years he has demonstrated that he can and is doing the job, like it's just nonsense. And so, if there's a primary, there will be multiple candidates if Evers moves on, and we'll hash that out. And maybe Democrats will pick a younger person and a fresher face, or maybe they won't. Because for all of the talk about Mom Donnie in New York, what hasn't been talked about is there was a young, fresh face versus a establishment Democrat, legacy Democrat in an Arizona congressional primary this week. And you know what? The young, fresh face got their butt kicked. They lost by 30 points to the daughter of the late Congressman Grivalja. So, like, these, like, overarching, we know what's best. We're not doing that. This stuff will get sorted out in some states and in some regions. The Democratic Party will want candidates who are more liberal. In other places, they'll want them who are more conservative. In other places, they will end up being older Democrats or middle-aged Democrats. And some places, they'll be younger. And that's the way it should work. The Democratic Party is a big tent.
How old is David Crowley, the county
executive? He's my age. He's like 38 or 39.
Oh, okay.
So is Chevy.
Yeah.
Cavalier. Mayor Johnson.
Yeah. And Steve's like, wow, Zepecki's a lot older than that.
Yes.
Even older than he actually is. Like, if you carbon dated him, he'd be even older.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Absolutely.
So, Dan Schaefer's the guy we're talking about, because he's a regular guest on here. He's written some pieces on this. I think they were interesting. It's not my side. At the end of the day, elections are binary choices. It's Evers versus somebody. Who's somebody, right? If you look at the data in the Marquette poll, 55% of the voters don't want Evers to run again. So pay no attention to that. I've just done some focus groups this week statewide. Evers does not have the depth of support you might think he does. But having said that, it's still a binary choice. You can't beat something with nothing. So Republicans have to present a credible alternative, regardless if it's Tony Evers or it's David Crowley or it's somebody else next year, if you want to win the governorship. I'm one to currently believe that 2026 could be a very good year for Republicans, much like 22 was for Democrats. It was supposed to be a red wave, turned out not to be a red wave. It wasn't even a red trickle. Democrats did well. Biden, you know, actually picked up seats in the House. I think the same could happen on the Republican side because of what I think is coming as it relates to the economy. But candidates still matter. You have to have good candidates. We want to win the governorship. If you want to have us, if you're listening to this and you want to have a budget that spends more than 16%, which this one did, you got to have a Republican governor. Full stop.
Question quickly, since you guys have been around Wisconsin politics a lot longer than I have, what is the origins? Like, how long has it always been the primary is in August and close to the general?
That got changed about, I think 2010.
Why?
Or was it right before the 12 election? Because
I'm so old. I worked on a September primary election.
So did I.
It was even later.
Later.
Yeah.
It was later.
So what would it take to move it earlier?
People didn't want to move it earlier because it moves up the filing deadlines, and it could disrupt the April elections, which I think is okay. But as it relates to the legislature, if you got a legislative candidate who's trying to level up to be a congressman or a United States senator or even governor or a lieutenant governor, it may happen during their term.
We got a break. Information you're not going to get anywhere else, because this is the most in-depth political conversation in the state of Wisconsin. I said it. All right, after the break, Nobel, does this president qualify? We'll see after this. Second hour with Bill McCosh and Joseph Pecky, our strategist friends who join us every Friday on Point Taken. Kristen and Steve here on 640 WTMJ.
Now we're in the double bonus.
Yeah,
no,
double
not
bonus.
Yet. Yes,
not yet.
Almost.
We got
still
the news.
Still shooting 101.
We got the news coming up with Connie Weber in a bit, and the latest from ABC. But last week, Israeli Prime Minister Benjamin Netanyahu nominated Donald Trump, current president of the United States, for the Nobel Prize. Other people have nominated him, a representative from Georgia, Buddy Carter, who I'm not familiar with. He also nominated the president for the Nobel Prize. People like Lindsey Graham have said he's worthy. Charlie Kirk, the talker, other people. Bill, what do you think about this idea of Donald Trump maybe being a Nobel winner for peace? Not the science
stuff. I
think
it's worthy of discussion. I think the Trump doctrine really is world peace, and he's tried extremely hard in some difficult situations to bring peace, and some have turned out to be harder than he expected, the Russia-Ukraine situation. But there's no question that that's his default position is peace over war. And yeah, I mean, I don't know what the criteria they're looking for, but Barack Obama got it for being elected president. So I'm not sure what he did that was greater at that point in time than what Donald Trump has actually done as president.
Obama, to his credit, actually said he wasn't sure if he was even worthy of it. He got it away. He got it away. It was ridiculous, is what it was. Go ahead.
Let's talk facts. So in 4 years as president, Joe Biden launched 555 airstrikes. In the first 6 months of his term, Donald Trump has overseen 529. The conflict in the Middle East is still ongoing. The conflict in Russia and Ukraine is ongoing. I can't wait to talk about the thing I'm happy about from the other side this week. We're doing that, right?
We can. Kristen will confirm. Yeah, we can do that.
India and Pakistan basically called BS on him having any role in that not escalating further. And so, those are all facts that Donald Trump said he would solve the Russia-Ukraine conflict within 24 hours. It's still ongoing. He said he wanted a permanent ceasefire in the Middle East, and it's still ongoing. So, if you want to give him the medal, the prize for effort, that's fine. I would like to see some results. If he actually gets these things, if he gets Russia back behind the lines, if he solves the Middle East thing, then absolutely give the man the Nobel Peace Prize.
Maybe a pause.
But I'm pretty skeptical that he's going to be able to pull it off.
Does anyone think he's going to win the Nobel Prize?
No.
I think he's got a shot, yeah.
Really?
I do.
He sort of made up.
Do you think anyone else in the world that's trying to do more for peace, promote peace than him?
But I don't argue that he believes in that, but I some of his actions and some of the things he said about like Putin or not said about Putin are concerning in that area. But
you're also forgetting, like, this is not an election. It's like five Swiss professors sitting in a room in an ivory tower, like.
This group of people is nominated by the citizens of Norway.
Yeah, which I would normally think he wouldn't have a shot at. But I also wouldn't think that the NATO chief would say the nice things he said about American president, both on foreign soil and on American soil. So, times have changed. Trump
denial
has changed things.
Is not just a river in Egypt,
I mean,
folks.
I'm looking at the list on Wikipedia of the last, in the 2020s, in the 21st century of who's won. And I have to go back. I mean, this is maybe showing my own naivete. I have to go back to 2014 when Malala won it.
Just hanging out on a Friday with Bill McCosh, Joseph Peck, and Kristen Bryce. These video point taken on 620 WTMJ. Kristen?
Double OT.
Yes.
We're now in double OT.
Yeah, we are.
Welcome to the last. We
did it, Bill.
The
first one to score wins.
We finally earned it.
You earned your way to that final.
We've hosted this in a 3-hour format before.
Yeah.
That's true.
Yes.
Yeah.
All right. So this
is a lot of Bill McCosh and Joseph Peck. Trust
that's
me.
That's a lot.
Haven't listened back to that. Oof.
Our wives were not listening. Let me assure you.
No.
This isn't even a story. It's a clip of two people who represent Wisconsin, who constantly are swiping at each other online, and.
It's like a cat fight, really.
It's just the prime example of unserious people having very serious jobs.
I'm going to stop you right now. Mark Pocan is a serious legislator.
Is he?
He has proven that.
Is he?
Yes.
What is his thing of this? All right, I'm going to play the
What's
clip.
His thing? His thing is he knows DVO's got like permeable skin that he can get under, and so he he does pokes it.
All right,
the guy
let's play the clip.
Time.
So basically, they were on Capitol Hill. Representative Pocan was giving an interview, I think it was with Spectrum News, and the motorcycle you're going to hear is Representative Van Orden basically revving his motorcycle as the start. So here we go. It's about a minute long.
Way that you're not going to have those safeguards, that's the real problem.
Anything else?
There he is.
Derek Van Horn, you can put that on the news. Hey, Derek. Classy as always, man. We love it. Thank you.
Have you lost your mind?
Yeah, right.
You know, people read the stuff.
I saw your drunken tweet at 1:30 in the morning last night.
No, I got done with the NDA.
Oh,
I got
it. Sure.
This is Mark.
It's a problem,
and I don't know what it is, but I encourage you to see a mental health counselor. It's absolutely disgusting.
Derek, why don't you debate me? Why are you so afraid to debate anyone? Here, we can do this to the media. Why don't you want to debate the big... Beautiful bill.
So Mark Corban, why are you afraid has never to had a job have a in his entire life other than politics, and he doesn't understand it.
I've owned a small business for 37 years. Tony, you own a small business. That's a little work, isn't it?
And he funnels over $500,000 a year of his campaign money to buy signs from his company.
Okay, look that up. Oh, my God. Are you drinking right now, Derek? That's the real question. All right.
Here's the part of this that I want to flag for people, because I think it's gotten really missed. Tony, in that exchange, is Republican Congressman Tony Weed, who represents the 8th Congressional District. Mark Pocan and Tony Weed's politics are very different. Do you agree, Bill?
Yep, totally.
They were doing a joint appearance. I don't even know what it was about, but probably something that is non-controversial and matters to Wisconsin that they're like working together on. And that is how this should work, that people like Mark Pocan, who are far to the left, and people like Tony Weed, who are far to the right, can find common cause and do joint appearances like Bill and I do every week and not be total knobs to one another. And for Derek Van Orden to do what he did, like that is why Mark Pocan keeps poking at the guy, because he is easy to rile up and make look and sound like a lunatic, because that's what DVO sounded and looked like there. And who was the one who was wanted to keep it on the issues? Mark Pocan going, Derek, why don't we debate the big, beautiful bill? If you voted for it, debate me. And Pocan is going into Van Orden's district and doing town halls, taking questions from constituents in the third, because Van Orden won't do it. You can bemoan where the serious people. Mark Pocan is the serious person in that conversation based on that clip and what I have seen for the last several years.
My thing is, I feel like he keeps poking the bear. And I don't know if it's to show, because obviously there's a lot of people in the base, so the Democratic base, who want elected Democrats to fight more, right? They want more of a backbone. They want more of, like, what are you doing to stop this administration, to get, you know, to get Congress to do something? So I just don't know if him constantly poking at Representative Van Orden is him demonstrating that he's doing that. I'm trying to understand the battle between them.
Van Orden could have driven in any direction other than that interview. What do you want Pocan to do in that case?
So I've known Mark Pocan a long time. Where Joe and I are going to disagree, he's a very smart guy.
Oh, and that's
and not just on policies, very smart on politics. He was far more effective, in my opinion. This is where his people are going to lose their, you know what, when he was in the legislature than he's been in the Congress. He hasn't done much in the Congress. Mm-hmm. And that's disappointing. I thought he would do more while he was out there. I thought he'd be a bigger player on the political side. I thought he'd be a bigger player on the policy side. He's really not. When he ran the Joint Finance Committee here in 9 and 10, he was a player. He was a big-time player and got things done, and he was a strategist politically. This is all beneath him. I don't get it. I do get it. It's all about the 3rd Congressional District, where Democrats are now on their second and third attempt to try and redistrict that seat.
But Derek
Van Orden's a Navy SEAL. Of course he's going to fight back. And does he use language that a Navy SEAL would use? Yeah, he does. And our side likes that. I don't think anything Mark Pocan has done will harm Derek Van Orden in any manner.
I hear everything you're saying, but to me, the use of their time to excessively tweet constantly, I mean, or Van Orden like 40 some times in one day, and I don't know how many Pocan's doing, but it's
775 according to Dan O'Donnell yesterday. They've done the research on it. I mean, why would you do that? I don't get that.
That's the part that drives me nuts. Just do your damn jobs. I don't need to see you on Twitter. Am I wrong on that?
Do good things for people of Wisconsin. How about that?
I don't disagree, but I think it's kind of crazy that anybody who's like pro Trump is like, boy, so and so is tweeting too much. Really?
Am I pro Trump?
No, I'm talking about Bill.
I'm just saying the number of times he tweeted at Derek Van Orden or about Derek Van Orden.
It's 744 over how many months and years?
I think it's 18 months.
What's the connection between these? Away from the public, what's the connection? Why do these two have seemed to have gone?
It's all about the seat. It's all about the seat. Yes. Okay. Right. Yeah,
but Van Orden has not been in politics long enough to know that this is politics, and
not personal.
And he thinks it's personal.
Well, he's a Navy SEAL. Yeah, you take a shot at him. He's got a bigger gun. He's going to shoot back.
Serious question. Is there a chance that this thing could get violent at some point?
No.
You don't think so?
No.
No, because when there was, what was it, about a month ago, when there was a credible threat against Derek Van Orden, I think Pocan was one of the first ones to decry it and reach out.
Good to hear.
All right, so we're going to have a feel-good segment that we're going to try out when we come back. We need a name for it. Segment to be named later.
I thought
about this on the drive over today. Do you have a name already?
I have a name. I'll tell you after the break.
All right. So that's the tease. Not as strong as Steve's tease.
Steve's got his A game today.
I didn't write the tease for this. This is
I know. That's
thing.
The name. It's not as strong as yours have been so far this show. Stay tuned.
I brought the A game.
It's point taken.
Oh, this is like country music for old men right here. Nice job, Jazz.
All right, so as I was driving to work today, a thought popped into my head. I'm like, oh, maybe this would make a fun segment. Because I feel like we're very good when the four of us, but specifically Joe and Bill, are making, you know, jabs.
We're so mean to one another.
Not mean, but there's, you know, there's...
Angry Joe.
Yeah, angry Joe. There's always a fair amount of, well, what about this? That happens as far as Republican versus Democrat. So I thought we could introduce a new segment on Fridays where each of you has to say something sincerely, not a backhanded compliment, but a sincere compliment about someone. So either an elected official, a candidate, the party in general.
I can't just tell Bill how handsome I think he is.
No, it has to be.
Wow.
It has to be said
that's
outside
all over the text line already.
It's just something that you
a lot of people saying
admire
that.
Or acknowledge that the other party did this week. You know, to say that sometimes, you know, to give bipartisanship a chance.
I will start.
Like peace.
All right, and we can't be sarcastic. What do you want to call this?
So I was thinking, when you brought this up, I said, great idea. And I was thinking, like, you know, those family arguments where everyone's yelling at each other and, like, the grandma or the grandfather in some cases, they say something nice. They shut it all down. That's what this is.
The nuns say that at Catholic school, too.
Absolutely. Yeah. Before they wrap you
Before you knock, get knocked with a ruler. So I'll start. Chris Taylor, Dane County Circuit Judge, former Democratic state lawmaker, is an announced candidate for the Wisconsin Supreme Court, potentially running against incumbent Rebecca Bradley. We don't know if she's going to seek re-election yet. She announced her finance report late last week, and it showed $580,000 raised in about 6 weeks. It is a staggering amount of money for a race that isn't until next April. It's a statement amount of money. I hope Republicans are paying attention. I don't think that race is going to be $100 million like it's been the last couple of times, but it's going to be a very expensive race, and Chris Taylor's off to a very good start.
Do you think it won't be that expensive because it's not for the majority of the court?
Yes, okay. Correct.
But isn't it put Republicans in a really bad spot if they lose another seat?
Well, yeah, I mean, if Rebecca Bradley doesn't run, then it's an open seat, which does create a little bit of a level playing field. But that also gives Taylor the advantage that she's got a $580,000 head start.
Got it. All right.
Joe.
I am very glad that the Trump administration has decided to arm Ukraine. I don't care how long it took. I don't care that they're like figuring out a way to do it like through NATO and then backfilling. Like the end of the day, Ukraine needs to be able to defend itself against Russian attacks that continue. And everything else aside, I'm glad that the Trump administration is now going to be providing arms to Ukraine.
I like this segment.
Yeah. I'll just say this. I enjoy the fact that you guys have vastly different political opinions, but you're respectful and nice to each other, and we have a lot of fun, and that's the part I love.
It's the thing. We're nice all the time, and then they're yelling at us.
Say something nice.
Right? That's not
it's a good acknowledgement that good idea you can still appreciate things that the other party is doing that is just right.
There's
right.
more that unites us than divides us.
Like Tony Evers, when he was talking about the budget negotiations, he found a positive.
We got Coldplay CEO guy bringing us together. Right. We got the Epstein files bringing us together. There is more that unites us than divides us, people.
This is a feel-good moment on the show.
Yeah.
We need shirts.
All right. Grab bag?
Grab bag next. Oh, it's always fun to do the show with Bill and Joe. We do generally enjoy each other's company. And it's fun to talk about serious things, but also fun stuff, too. Now, grab bag can be anything. Chris and I were talking about grab bag this morning. Who wants to start today?
I'll go. My father-in-law, Billy Boy Kumpf, would have been 100 this week. We lost him in March. You guys heard me give sort of a eulogy to him, which is tough. So we miss you, Billy. Happy birthday. My grab bag is about my business partner in the Janesville Jets. I'm wearing my Janesville Jets shirt if you're
great
watching
story,
this online.
By the way.
Joe Pavelski. He won the American Century Celebrity Golf Outing in Lake Tahoe over the weekend. This was his ninth time entering. Joe, if you don't know Joe, played for the Wisconsin Badgers, won a national championship here in Milwaukee at the Bradley Center in 2006. 14 years for the San Jose Sharks. He was called Captain America when he was there. 4 years with the Dallas Stars. Made it to the Stanley Cup Finals twice. Didn't win the Cup. Phenomenal person and golfer. So Sunday, if you watch the American Century Golf Outing, this guy's from Plover, Wisconsin. He's a Wisconsinite through and through, and he's playing with Aaron Rodgers, Steph Curry, and all these big-time stars, and he's kicking their butt. Mm. This guy was lights out. He gets an eagle on the 18th hole, and it's an interesting scoring system, so he got 6 points for that. He ended up winning the tournament by nine under their scoring system, and it was a phenomenal thing to watch this guy who's eating dinner at our table, and we looked after him when he was in college, and I've known him since he was, a Wisconsin Badger, and to watch him play with that much poise, with that much sort of on the line, was fun. And it was great for the state of Wisconsin. So shout out to my partner, Joe Pavelski.
Great story. Great story.
I won't be here next Friday, so if you miss your Zepecki Phil, come to German Fest. I will be at German Fest Friday night next week and on Sunday afternoon. Come
performing
say hi.
Or no, serving beer? What are you doing?
Cooking up brats and Hungarians and sausages and kraut. We do that every year. We played in the Polish Heritage Alliance golf outing yesterday. Speaking of successful golf outings, my dear old dad and I teamed up with another father-son duo, a buddy I grew up with, and we won the thing at minus 13 at Muskego Lakes. And I think it's worth noting.
That's a good score.
That we are celebrating my family's German and Polish heritage. Almost everybody came from somewhere else, and remember that amidst all this immigration stuff.
I will be attending my wife Kathy's family reunion. This is 300-plus Polish people. And the reason I bring it up is my mother-in-law passed away, and she loved this thing, and she will not be there this year. It's such a fun event. The food's amazing. We do all these adult games and kids games. And to get that group together, which is, I don't know, six or seven generations now, in this case at the Legion Park in Oak Creek there on Shepherd Avenue, it's like such a fun thing. So my ask is, can it not rain all day? That's a lot of wet Polish
rain.
People that I don't want to hang out with. I
wet
want them to be
poles.
Happy.
Some wet poles.
Come on, dry this out. You got a quick one before we go, Kristen?
My quick one is, if you have someone in your life who likes, who doesn't mind attention, I made my mom, she came to Storm the Bastille last night, and I made her wear a crown and a sash for her 70th birthday. And just the Milwaukee Nice people showed up. The amount of happy birthdays she got from strangers and people giving her hugs and compliments and
stuff.
She
deserved everyone.
That's awesome.
She was just soaking it up. And so it was a fun thing to make someone in your life do.
And oh, by the way, your husband put a nice event together last night.
He did
that
a very good job.
Everything I've seen, the drone shots and all the videos I've seen on local TV and heard people talking about it. Fantastic job, Michael.
He's good at organizing people's fun.
Yeah. You got a winner there.
I did good.
He won.
Thanks, Joe.
Says Joe Zepecki. All right, we're going to do it all again next week. Have a great weekend.